Hello and welcome back to the Dr. K Show. I am so excited for today's episode. I have two incredible athletes with me today, and I cannot wait for you to meet them. Sarah Newberry and Pam Ralph with me, and we met on a previous podcast called Mum's the Word through Wisp Sports, which many of you know I have several podcasts over there. And now they have their new podcast, The M Game, all about combining motherhood and athletes. Their biggest goal is to help in the efforts working towards a level playing field in sport and life. And that's huge. And so I'm really excited to talk with them about that today. Quick introductions. Sarah is a Team USA athlete on the sailing team. She was the top American in her Olympic event in 2020, which is so cool. She has put it's not really a pause. She's still with the team and she's still training, but she is growing a family. She is very close to having her first kiddo, and she is planning to and will be going back to sailing, which is apparently something that's not done very often. So I'm really looking forward to asking her some more questions about that. And then Pam was a rower and has won gold in the Paralympics in London in 2012, and then also a second Paralympic gold in Rio in 2016. She was the first ever rower to ever win two golds in the Paralympics, also so cool. And in 6 years, she earned six titles with the combined Paralympics and the World Championships. So gosh, welcome. I'm so excited to have you both today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yes. Thank you so much, Dr. K.
Yeah, so let's start with this. Sarah, can you give me an introduction into how you got into sports and your sport particularly?
Sure. Yeah. I started fairly young. I was maybe 11 or 12 and, you know, kind of like with any youth sport, just sort of natural, weekend training and weekday training. And then, eventually found my niche in the sport, which was, high performance sailing. So kind of like, fast boats, foiling, boats that require a lot of technical skill and technical detail management. You know, of course, you think of a sailboat and you think of the classic yacht with beautiful white sails. And so we are a little different from that, but it's all the same set of principles. And our Olympic class, the one that I race in now, is called the NACRA 17. It is the only mixed gender Olympic class for 2021, Tokyo. Although hopefully as we move forward, there will be several more Olympic mixed sailing classes. So in my boat, there's two people, one man, one woman. The orientation is up to you. There are very few female drivers. I'm one of the few female drivers in the country for sure. And then also in the world, I think there's probably less than 10 that are really active. And what else? It has been an amazing journey. I've been doing it for 7 or 8 years now, almost full time, very full time in the last six. And so I am where I am right now, because after we finished our qualifying event in early 2020, we had a great Worlds. We're the top American team. We had our probably best performance ever at a world class event, but it wasn't enough to win our trial slot. We had kind of gotten too behind in the first event, and after that, COVID happened, yeah. And I started talking to my husband about having a baby. And my teammate, he was on board and it has been a great choice. So I've been, cool. You know, with the way the fleet and everything has played out, we don't have a lot of racing. And sure. I've been pregnant for 8.5 months. So I'm pretty busy right now.
You're so close. Oh, yeah. That's so exciting. Awesome. I have lots of questions, but Pam, will you give us an introduction? How did you get into your sport? And what does that all look like now?
Yeah, so I started rowing in 2010. If you reverse a couple of years, I joined the British Army when I was 16 in the UK, which is the earliest age that you can join. Yeah. And I was on a fast track to become an engineering officer. So I went to, they paid a little bit of towards my university education so that I would be able to become an engineer. And I was sponsored by the Corps of the Royal Engineers in the British Army. And I've suffered with arthritis since I was a little kid. Sorry, that's a big, big,
oh, no,
element that I totally missed out, but I've suffered with arthritis since I was diagnosed when I was 7. Initially with juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which then got reclassified as psoriatic arthritis after I finished growing, because the symptoms and signs of degeneration didn't stop when I stopped growing. Mm-hmm. And so the army knew that I suffered with this condition, but it was really well managed just through like lifestyle at that time. I did take medication for it, but it was, you know, it was the medication I was taking is called sulfasalazine. And these are probably the British words for the medication. So it might be different over here, but, okay. And it was pretty well managed and managed to kind of get through all of the, like, the medical loopholes to get into the military. Okay. And I loved it. I did it. I was in for 4.5 years and it was like a huge, huge part of my life. And it was what I wanted to do. And I knew I was going to be really, really effing good at it. I'm not going to swear because I'm trying to be on my best behavior, but really good at it. And unfortunately, my arthritis just started to get worse as I got older and when I was at college. And I'm sure that it was probably part of like the lifestyle I was living at that time as well, as I was partying a lot more. I wasn't looking after myself as much as I should in terms of like my lifestyle, my sleep and stuff like that. Yep. So my condition did worsen enough for me to have to go onto a new kind of medication, which was, it's called methotrexate, which is a lot more intense of a drug. And around that time, the Army Medical Classification Board kind of declassified me medically and said that I wouldn't be eligible to continue on the scheme I was in, or, you know, just because it wasn't worth their risk. They basically were saying, well, in a deployment situation, if we couldn't get your medication to you in, if you were in a deployment situation, then you would not be able to do your job to the level that we need you to do it, which at the time I was like, no, that's not the case. I could definitely survive without this medication. It was total garbage. Like, they were right. And my arthritis needs to be controlled through medication. I've tried now twice to go cold turkey and just stop taking anything for it. And I basically, over the course of about 6 months, just grind to a halt. Sure. And so unfortunately my medical declassification was, completed. So I was medically discharged from the army, right around my 4.5 year point, which was really devastating. And I was, like I said, I was like, everyone that I wanted to hang out with, all my friends, all of my contemporaries were forging ahead with their military careers, and mine was kind of crumbling away, which was really sad. And my family all were really heartbroken for me. My sister at the time had been talent scouted because she is, 6'1" and really strong for a junior rowing program for like a Great Britain fast, they called it World Class Start. So it's like they talent scout in schools and they kind of take people that show the signs of having physical prowess. And she was training for Great Britain, I think in the under 21s team at that point. And she went up to the Paralympic coaches who train alongside the Olympic team and said, look, here's my sister. She's like 5'11". She's really, really strong. She's really like strong in her mind as well and really determined. And she just got medically discharged from the army because her wrist. So this is my good wrist. It goes like this. The main reason I classify as a Paralympic athlete is because my right wrist just doesn't move. Like, I've got like almost 0% flexion and extension in my right hand and wrist. Yep. And obviously with rowing, that's kind of important to be able to like move your hands and stuff. And I also have the same in my left ankle. And this is just through the bones are basically calcified and all stuck together now because of the arthritis. So she said to the Paralympic coaches, so she's got this wrist and it only goes like this. It doesn't move very much. Do you think she would classify? And they were like, oh, well, let's just bring her down. And they're constantly trying to find new talent and new athletes. And they're like, let's just bring her down and see. So I went down and I kind of reluctantly went down because I was like, I'm not disabled. Like, I'm not a Paralympic athlete. Yeah. Come on. Like, I've been in the military for 4.5 years and I've played rugby. Like, I'm a really physically capable person. My right arm has probably got about 40% of the strength as my left arm. It's always has been because I've never used my right hand growing up. I've just adapted my life to be able to like not use my right arm that much. Yeah. And it's worked for me fine. And so I go down, I get classified and I'm kind of like, yeah, I'll do it because I've got nothing else going on because I've just been kicked out of the army and I'm like kind of feeling really sad for myself. And they were like, oh yeah, you classify. You don't just classify. You're like fully fully Paralympic classification, eligible. And so the coaches kind of talked me into it. They were like, look, why don't you just give it a go? London 2012 is a year and a half away. If you train really hard, maybe you might get to go. Who knows? How cool would that be? And even if it's just do it just to see, different, side of things. And I started training and I just got the bug and I just loved it and loved training, loved the training atmosphere, loved racing. It was I felt like I'd really kind of found myself, and it really helped me transition from this really negative point in my life of having my career taken away from me to then really accepting the fact that, I've had this disability since I was 7. It's just that I just didn't call it that. I called it my arthritis instead of my disability, which is it's just a different word. And it was allowing me to accept the fact that, I've got this issue, a health issue through no fault of my own. And it's means that I am a little bit limited in comparison to my contemporaries, and I'm not ashamed or anything of it. So,
that's really cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of how, that was my rowing origin story.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
And then she won 2 gold medals.
I know. She went on to do so many things with it too, which is so cool. I'm going to propose this question to both of you. So either one, if you both want to answer it, cool. If one of you just wants to take it, what has been your experience being women in sport? Just that simple question.
Well, it's really interesting because both Sarah and I compete in sports with men, it's really weird that we've met and we have so many similarities, but I competed in a mixed gender boat class and Sarah competes in a mixed gender boat class. And there's pretty much just a handful of sports across Olympic and Paralympic sports that actually combine genders for joint competition. Right. And so my experience as being a woman in sport, I have to say in Great Britain, our athletes are really well taken care of. At least I was really well taken care of in the rowing team, because they need us. There's not an option of being we're just going to focus and give the money and give the support to the men,
right?
Because they needed the women, needed us, and a lot of, it would have made no sense for them to just focus on our male counterparts. If you've got 2 women sitting in the boat, we basically would be 180 kilos worth of dead weight just being dragged down the course by 2 big guys. It's just no point. You may as well have 2 fit, strong, well supported, well nourished, well maintained women as well to help along. So I had a really great experience, and I was coached by a female coach and then a male coach. And I would say that it was really I had a really very uplifting experience as a woman in my sport.
That makes me really happy to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I can say the exact same thing. I think that people tried very, very hard in my sport to provide the same resources and the same coaching style to women. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the sport is where it needs to be. And I'm really happy to hear that you had a positive experience, Pam. And it's really interesting too, because we're totally different federations, right? The US and the UK.
Yep.
For me, we were working on our podcast, our previous podcast that we had started with Wisp Sports a couple months ago. And, I was writing a list for an episode. I was thinking, how many coaches have I had and what were their genders? And I wrote this big list of every coach I had ever had. Mm-hmm. And there were 25 names in the list and there were 3 women. And also over the last 2 years, I've been working really closely with a sports psychologist to kind of break down some of the issues that I've run into as an athlete that I think have prevented me from having a lot of success at the beginning of my career. Sure. And in that process, I've been like, whoa, wait a second. There are all these things that happened that are seemingly innocuous, but actually create a lot of barriers for an individual. For example, I had a coach once who told me, what I heard over and over again a million times was you're being too emotional. Stop being so emotional.
Sure.
And I heard also from a similar coach, we were at one of my first big championships internationally. I had just gotten into the Olympic circuit and we were top 5. We were standing so well, I didn't have any fucking clue what I was doing. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
I had no idea. And then, and so generally what happens when you have no clue what you're doing really well, is like you're riding a high and then you kind of hit a low point at some moment.
Yeah.
And after a bad day of racing that event, my coach said, you know, if you were a male athlete, we could easily win a gold medal. And he was teasing me, he thought, oh, it's so funny. Like, you know, just stop being so emotional, like stop thinking so hard, stop being female. And I took all those things like really to heart from the moment that I was like 14 until when I was, 30, and all of those things added up to very subtly create a dynamic in which I believed that like somehow my innate talent or skill or like who I am as a person, like what my identity was, is what was going to define the outcome of my career in sport. And I think a lot of people, men and women, fall into that trap, like mistaking their identity as an athlete, conflating it with their performance, for example.
Right. Isn't that insane? Because you can have athletes that are so, you can have athletes that cover every single type, personality type, like pro athletes. You can have people who have come from every different background. It's nothing, I don't think it's anything to do with the person and who they are. Obviously you need to have an innate physical skill, but personality has, I don't think it has anything. I think it has much, much more to do with who is managing you. Like,
yeah. And what structure, what skills are you learning to like fit into that unique identity or that those unique characteristics of you as a person, whether it's like you being really emotional or, something physiological, like your size or the size of your hands, if you're doing a specific sport.
Isn't that a terrible word to use as well? Like, because we have such negative connotations about the word emotional, like being too, like,
yes.
I would much, much rather spend time, especially as an athlete, with someone who was too emotional, because then you know that they've got skin in the game, right? As opposed to someone who just is like, right?
Yeah. No, and it's to me now as a coach, like somebody, as a full-time athlete and as a coach, I think about those moments and that use of words, and I'm like, that's because that coach didn't have enough skill or structure or knowledge to figure out how to tell this person what they needed. Mm-hmm. And they interpreted something that was foreign to them or confusing to them based on their personality as like a negative.
Yeah.
So interesting. So like, yes, I've been supported in my sport. Yep. There have been great moments with my federation and with my team. There are a lot of women in the management of US Sailing Team right now, and it's really cool to see. But the fact is our sport is a boys club. It's a male dominated sport. The top of the game, the America's Cup, Sail GP, which is like the kind of like super cool, like high performance racing circuit that was started by the same guy who ran an America's Cup team for years. It's so male dominated. It's designed, these positions are designed for men. Yep. And the spots in the industry they cater to men as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's a very cool moment to be in the sport. It's very cool to look at it and go, how can I create, an impact or make a change? And this is the last thing I'll say about it. That is kind of how Pam and I wound up on this podcast journey, because I was like, I want to have a kid. I should probably retire. And I was like, what is that? Like, where did that come from? That I would not be able to use all of this 10 years of, six for sure full-time, 10 almost full-time years of experience as an athlete in a very complex, very expensive sport. My education in the sport is cost well over $1 million. It's a $200,000 a year operation to run. So you're like putting in the time that a surgeon or somebody, and the money that a surgeon or someone who is an extremely well-educated professional puts in. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be like, oh wait, cause I'm a woman and I'm going to pop a baby out. Like my value is gone.
Yes.
So, okay. Yeah.
We're definitely going to need to get into that. We are going to get into that because we are doing this podcast partially from a selfish perspective, but and we'll get into that in a second. But I wanted to kind of back up just a little bit into what you said and give some more content and thoughts into that, just simply because it's so common to hear, like, you mentioned a lot of it, right? Like there's the shrink it and pink it, right? That mentality of like women need to shrink in order to fit, take up less space and to fit into whatever mold we've decided is what they should look like or what everybody else looks like. Right. Although that has literally no base on performance. In fact, the leaner and the smaller that women can get oftentimes is at a deficit to their performance. And that's all because of some weird image thing that has come up that is ridiculous. The second thing is also that, as you mentioned, for so long, all of the research and a lot of the different ways of coaching and nutrition have all been done on male athletes. And then that same research and all of those coaching techniques are then applied to women. And we're finding now, since we're finally getting research to come out on women, that is actually being done according to like looking at their cycles and seeing how all of these things actually contribute to your performance as a female. Like they're so different. And finally, we're starting to see that applying these things that we've learned to help men perform better don't actually apply very well to women. It's like, it's shocking that we're different people. I don't know how we didn't think of this beforehand because we have menstrual cycles and all sorts of things, but there's so much that you can do to work with female athletes, as you said, Sarah, to get performance. If you actually work with them as women, if you think about the hormone cycle, if you think about who we are as people and who that individual is as a person, developing that person as you go through sport, the outcomes could be so much different if we just considered and we treated people as their own unique person, right?
Yeah. I think that, so Sarah, you coach girls now. We were just talking about this and we were having a meeting before we came on the air here. And you were talking about kind of the approach that you were taking to some of the girls that you are coaching. And I wonder, because I'm thinking now about my first coach in rowing was a female and she was awesome. She took me from literally like having never taken a stroke before in my entire life to a Paralympic champion in like 18 months.
That's incredible.
Totally incredible. And also she took me from someone who had, I'd just been medically discharged from the military. I was in my third and final year of university and I had put on quite a lot of weight at university and I was very unhealthy and had made terrible choices with my diet. And I dropped like, I'm going to use the metric because I don't know what it is in pounds, but I dropped like 17 kilos in 18 months. And at the same time as putting on a ton of muscle, so it was probably more like 20 plus kilos of fat that I dropped in 18 months. And it was, none of it was done, you know, down the barrel of a gun. It was all done through a really nurturing way. And I know, and I'm thinking and listening to what Sarah's saying now, my coach was a lightweight rower. So I was a heavyweight rower, but when she competed as an athlete, she was a lightweight rower. And I think that she probably experience the worst of the worst of the worst of the way to approach female athletes and nutrition, specifically if they have to hit a weight class. And thank goodness that it wasn't history repeating itself because she handled me with kid gloves and that's really what I needed at that time to like get my shit in order. And she really taught me what I needed to do for myself. It wasn't just like being spoon-fed, is so good. And it's like, I'm only really appreciating this now. Like, what are we like nearly 10, where we about 10 years since I started rowing. And I'm only really kind of understanding now about how the success is so based on like all the people that are helping you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. It's so true. And you know, we love talking about the support system, but I think taking our favorite topic of pregnancy and sport out of it, I think when we're just talking about developing female athletes, it's so important. And it's so interesting that in some sports that those things are not available. That's specific. Yeah. I mean, and you know how, and right now, the time that we live in medicine, for example, what's next for medicine? Well, like, I mean, catering to specific physiology, right? And so in sport, if that, I mean, that's where we should be going anyway. It's so interesting to me to say, okay, like, well, what does this really look like? And I feel like I've been doing a lot of experiments with all my girls, because not like in a bad way, but just how do I approach them? What do I give them? What works best? And how is it different from what's working best for a young male athlete? And I would say, like, what, I don't know, I can only make a few concrete statements on this, but what has been my set of priorities has been to be open enough with them and to educate them enough on what is different about them without making them feel differentiated or trying to say, hey, this makes you fundamentally less or more capable of something, but allowing them to have the freedom to know that, hey, you know what, your cycle does matter. It exists and you will have to compete with it. Yes. And it might be different for you than it is for her, hormonally. And that, you know, your body and your brain are going to operate differently.
Yep.
And that's all fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that
it is.
Yeah. And I mean, trying to find some power in that knowledge for young female athletes and being open about it and not trying to, in no way trying to put them into a box or make them small male athletes and just make them empowered to be female athletes specifically. Exactly. If I can give young women that right now, like at the very least, that's, I think, something that's going to help retain them in the sport later. When they're being really challenged because they are competing directly with men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I, when I was in high school playing sports, all of that, we never touched any at all on any of it, you know, on cycles, nutrition. Like I'm learning about this now.
Same.
Because this is what I do. Right. Like this is this. And also because finally a lot of that research is coming out, but like, I'm just learning about it now. And that is what's just crazy to me. And I've been in sports all of my life. so it's crazy. So let's kind of dive into that motherhood part of things, as you mentioned. So when I said that I have you both on here for a selfish reason, it's mainly because it's very common for me. So as you also mentioned, like before I went to chiropractic school and got my doctorate, there was a chiropractor that my parents were seeing that said, well, you know, like just make sure that she understands that like there are many women that go and get these degrees and they spend all of this money and, you know, have debt and all that jazz, right? And then they decide to have kids and then they don't go back to work. So then you're just paying off this expensive degree and student loans and you're, you know, having kids.
Good warning.
it actually was a good warning, I think, in a sense, but it also was kind of like, because like I knew what I was doing at that time. I knew that this was something that I was probably going to be doing for the rest of my life because I love it. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely a part of my values of health, and like that is a core root value of everything that I do is health, right? Mm-hmm. And how to help other people find that as well. But it was kind of a strange thing. But then now this other stage of like, okay, I'm 31, probably would like to have kids within the next 10 years, right? but then I'm starting this whole like triathlon journey. I don't really want to press pause on that to like have a kid and then going back to sport, like what does that look like? You know, it's just, there's so many questions, which I think is part of why you both started this podcast. Because it's number one, it's just not really talked about all that much. It's starting to be talked about more obviously, but like, it's just not talked about all that much. And there's so many questions. But then, you know, I'll see women who did go back to sport and I'm like, oh, it can be done. Mm-hmm. Right. So I wanted to ask, you know, what have been some of the challenges that you both faced? I know Pam, you're not a rower anymore, but like, mm-hmm. have you been able to take some of the things you've learned as an athlete, you know, into motherhood, and what were some of the challenges maybe you faced as far as that goes? Sarah, same thing for you. You know, what was this whole process like of deciding to have a kid and all that? So I'll just open that up to you both.
Gosh, where to begin? Oh my gosh.
It's a big question.
I mean, I guess so. So one thing I would say is, so I retired from sport after Rio, after 2016, and I had my baby in 2020, the great 2020, the year that we will all remember.
Yeah, and he is cute.
He's really cute. He's called Harrison. And in 2018, so 2 years before Harry was born, I started a farm with a business partner. And it's like all encompassing. It's kind of everything I think about all day, every day, is like how to make my business successful. yeah, it's like, it's just, and I love it. It's like what you were saying, like, I love it. Like quite often, like farmers will ask like, oh, if you won the lottery and you didn't have to work anymore, what would you do? And I'd be like,
the same thing.
I would still farm because I just really enjoy it. And so I guess I can really relate to like this idea of having a child and then wanting to give yourself back to this thing that just drives you and drives you and drives you on. And I guess the biggest thing that I was not expecting was like the wanting to be out there doing stuff. And I'm not, I don't like the mom guilt has come into my life and I'm kind of okay with it now. And I'm okay talking about it, but like, trying to not feel guilty about the fact that I love my baby like more than you could possibly imagine.
Of course.
But I love what I do as well. And sometimes I really, really just want to be outside in the field and I want to be working outside, you know, on my project and on my business. And it's like coming to terms with the fact that I'm not like Earth Mother and I'm like not just wanting to just hold my child close all day every day. Like sometimes I just like someone needs to take my kid so I can go out and do my thing, and being okay with that, because for the first 6 months I had this like horrible like, why am I such a bad mom feeling? Because I want to be outside. Why don't I want to be inside nursing my child and holding him and touching his beautiful hair? And it's like I'm okay with that now. Like he's 14 months old now. And I've kind of just turned the corner maybe about 2 months ago when we, as a business, me and my business partner, she also had a baby last year. We decided that we were going to hire a nanny to look after our children for us whilst we farmed. And it was around that time that I was like, I'm so excited about the idea of giving my child to someone else to look after so that I can pursue my goals and pursue my dream. And it's like, just being comfortable in that space, being comfortable in the space that you're like, just because you have a child, you're not giving up everything it is that makes you you as well. Because a lot of what you see online is all about like you have a baby and then it's like that's who you are and that should be enough. And I for a long time was there like, shit, why is it not enough? Right.
Well, because you're more than just being a mom.
Yes. And especially I can imagine like if I was still competing as an athlete, like what would that process look like? Like wanting to just, cause to be an athlete, to be a pro athlete or to, you know, compete at any level in your sport, you have
to have fun like I do, which I'm an age group athlete. Like
you're an age group athlete, but you're doing an Ironman, you know, that's like, you're having to put a lot of hours into what you're doing. Like, I guess preparing your life ahead of time to be able to set that up. Like Sarah was saying, like, we're all about the support system and the support network and like trying to have that in place before you start thinking about the family. I did not have it in place. And then 2020 happened and my husband worked from home. And so, you know, 2020 has been crappy for so many reasons, but one of the light at the end of the tunnel for me was the fact that Rob was working from home. So it meant that every single hour that I was out farming, I did not have a baby strapped to me, because that would have made last year a heck of a lot harder, especially the fact that my business partner had a baby in August. So we would have like been two either pregnant or postpartum women, like crying our way through harvesting. It would have been dreadful. So that's kind of, I guess, my big thing is like learning to be okay with the mom guilt, because it'll be there regardless. Like I still feel guilty when I'm outside and I'm not with Harry, but it's like being okay with it because it's good for me and it's good for it makes me a better mother when I'm able to pursue my dreams as well.
Yes. And he'll be okay. And also you are setting an example as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think we all kind of have our own, like, I mean, everyone has things that they learn and have been conditioned to mm-hmm. believe, right? Like about what anything is going to be like. And I think for different people, your upbringing and what you've read and what you've seen, and, you know, like, maybe for some women, the things that are deeply concerning to you, Pam, aren't there. I mean, I think to me, they're somewhat there as well. Like, you know, what is that going to feel like?
Yeah.
And will I be able to handle the guilt of wanting to devote myself to my passion,
mm-hmm.
you know? But it's just so interesting to realize that each of us is going to has or is going to have our own set of challenges when it comes to what that really looks like if you want to do both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're trying to be conscious of that with the podcast that we've started and our dialogue about it. And it's one of the most remarkable things that we, you know, keep running into is like, yeah, every woman is different and every child is different and every situation is so different. One thing that occurs to me with you, Pam, and also with a lot of the women that we've spoken to over the last year is that the athlete mindset doesn't really leave you. You know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, okay, so maybe you don't apply it fully to sport in the moments of your pregnancy or even afterward. Maybe you're like, I'm done with this. I'm moving on to some other passion that I have. But what makes you an athlete and what really drives you and the ways that you think about the world that allow you to succeed and be a champion, those don't go away. And I really think that's kind of the thing behind this podcast, the M game, you know, for us, like,
yeah.
What does it mean to bring your M game, to bring your motherhood game, or like whatever you want to call it? And I think that it's about having a dialogue about what that mindset looks like and helping other women, even if they're not athletes, to identify what a very strong mindset and a belief system can be and how that helps or has impacted mothers who want to go back into their passion, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to say one other thing about this that occurred to me as you were talking, Pam. Oh, actually, Dr. K, you asked the question. I think the question you asked was something like, was something pointing at, you know, how do women do that? And how does it happen? And how can you go back to professional sport or being a very competitive amateur athlete after you give birth and become a mom? And I was thinking about it and I was like, wait, so I'm still in this process right now.
You
and
are,
I'm looking yeah. at, yeah, like I'm not even holding the baby in my arms yet. I've had moments of complete and total fear that, like, yes. I'm going to be like cast by the wayside of my sport. But then those moments will pass because I realize I go back to my athlete mindset and I'm like, oh, here are all the things that I'm great at and what I have.
Yep.
And then I'm watching other female athletes who are, you know, at the top of their game, and we're talking to them, people like Kimi Fassani and people like, for example, we haven't spoken to her, but talking about Allyson Felix the other day, who's on the verge of becoming, you know, even more of a record-breaking athlete in her sport in the world. And I think, I wonder what they experienced. And it has to be something very tied in to your faith and your belief.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two things that occur to me are a huge part of sport. Like you kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other sometimes, even when you're the most challenged in your sport. So like with this process for me so far, it's been like, I think I can do this. I think I can do this. I really want to do this. I think I can. And then I make a commitment to it. And from that point on, it's like a matter of my belief in my ability to do it when I don't really think I can.
That is so, literally the perfect words for how I feel about this Ironman coming up.
I think as well, when it comes to sport, like, I think that if it is your passion and it's the thing that you just love to do, regardless of having a baby or anything, like, you make it happen because, you know, you like, it might cost $200,000 a year to do your passion, but you make it happen because you're like, this is what I want to do. And it's something that's driving you forward. It's not kind of like I'm going to clock in and clock out and I'm just going to put in the bare minimum because it's my job. Like, you go above and beyond to make it happen because it's the thing that you want to do. And it's the thing that makes you feel good. And I think that, you know, we like having a baby, if it's something that makes you feel good to the point where if you don't do it, you're not the same person and you don't like that person, you have to just make it happen.
Yeah.
And again, the practical stuff, like we've interviewed a bunch of ladies about, like, you know, the physical turmoil of having a baby and going through a pregnancy, yeah, and the postpartum, like making sure that your body is prepared for that in whatever way is appropriate for you as an individual, and then giving yourself enough time to recover afterwards. It's like any major event, isn't it? It's like, you know, I think I'd rather have a baby than do an Ironman, not gonna lie.
Well, that's good to know. Happy to hear that.
We are about to do one, so I don't know why you would say that. I honestly just, I did a marathon once, and I literally, like, okay, I loved it. I loved every single second of it. It was just brutal, but I loved it. But I was like, I've done one. Never going to do it again, yeah, but I've done one, like, with a big smile on my face. Like, so I can't even imagine. I really can't.
Oh, that's amazing. I have noticed, though, just as like Sarah mentioned, there's so many lessons I've learned in sport that I've applied to my business, and things I've learned in business that apply to sport and sport mind and the athlete mindset. Like, it all translates, you know. And so it's cool to hear from other people that are that are experiencing and doing the same things, you know, in many ways. It just looks different. And that's why I love having these conversations.
Oh yeah, my business partner must get so frustrated with me, because I've come from obviously a pro athlete background, and she's a dietitian. So yeah, I come at everything like, we need to do this the best that we can possibly do it. Everything has to be done 100% right. We have to do all of the research. And I'm like, I'm super intense. Like, I know that I am. And and she's there going like, Pam, sometimes if you do something to 80%, that's better than then spending like 10 more hours to get the 20%. Like, we just need to get shit done. And it's like, she really teaches me to run a business. Sometimes you can't be an athlete in your head. Like, you have to just get it done and get it out the door and like be okay with it.
Really hard though, to like learn and figure out. It's nice that you have somebody to help you work through.
I know.
If
I was doing this farming thing by myself, I swear to God, I would still be like perfecting my perfect little raised beds and exactly, like putting the seeds in like this.
I really think athletes, I mean, having a good athlete mindset is being a perfectionist who can be disciplined enough to put off the perfectionism. Like, really just like, you always want 100%. And sometimes it's like that thing that your business partner is able to do is like, that's the discipline part. Like, I don't need 100%. I need 85% right now.
We literally just have to take action right now. That's all.
That's
the
combination of athlete and entrepreneur, right? That's like the secret source of like knowing when 100% is needed and when 80% will do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I have a couple more questions. So Sarah, what has some of your training looked like while you're pregnant? Like, what shifted and what have you been doing currently while you're pregnant, just to keep up with the team and all that?
Great question. When we first conceived, it was like last August or September.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, so throughout my first trimester, I was still actively training on the boat, and we were training out in Long Beach, California in the waves. And
cool.
My teammate and I were like putting in normal full days of training. Reached a point with that for me where I was like physically uncomfortable, like with morning sickness and stuff, not vomiting a lot or anything, but just, I was exhausted. First of all, I've never been so tired in my entire life. And I'm now back to that place with the third trimester. But now I like know that I'm dealing with something that makes sense to me, because the first trimester was like getting hit by a truck. I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea this was going to be as miserable, but in a very exciting way. And then when you're trying to train full time while you feel like you've just gotten run over, it's like, it's very, very, it was a very upsetting feeling for me as an athlete. Like I knew I was up to a challenge, but I didn't realize how challenging that would be. And then when you're balancing that with working with a teammate who actually has zero comprehension of what that might feel like at all, you're navigating a very new part of your relationship with that singular teammate as well. So that was really challenging for our team, and it was very challenging for me. And I was not a very nice person sometimes during the first trimester. So it allowed us to really scrape a lot of the issues that we had in our team communication-wise off the surface and start to hash them out with a sports psych and our performance coach, which was amazing. So over the last year, that's been great. because we're like, oh, we were a little codependent, and the pregnancy was able to like show us that and to create some independence on our two-person team, and to give me, you know, to give me my body back to myself and to give him his independence. And so super cool. But we did pull the ripcord on training right around the end of the first trimester. Okay. And I came home to Miami in the fall, and I had 2 months where I wasn't doing anything. And I was miserable. Uh-huh. I was trying to be like really good to myself and be like, and give myself, as we like to say, a lot of grace and be like, this is fine. Like waking up exhausted, napping, like eating, trying to walk and do things and stay active. And I was really kind of like between being a full-time athlete and doing nothing. And it was very, very difficult for me mentally and physically. And I started to experience, so for me, every time I'm sedentary, I wind up with sciatica. Because my lumbar because I'm not doing the work for my core, and my lumbar becomes a little compressed, and then it's like it's a good sign that I'm not in a good place as soon as I start to experience that pain.
Sure.
And so around that time, I think I was like 4 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. I just got back in touch with my athletic trainer who's here in Miami, and we've been working together closely since the 4 month mark. And that has been amazing. Like that's been, so I tried the route of give myself grace, just be a normal person, do nothing. And it didn't work because my body likes to be active. So for some people, I think the opposite is true. For some people, if you sit at a desk most of the day, and then you start going to try to do some crazy stuff, you know, on the gym floor, like you're probably not going to feel as great. It's going to be painful for you. For me, stopping was painful.
Mm.
And so I've been working with my trainer. He owns a company called Train Space here in Miami, and he's awesome. So we've done a lot of focus on, in the beginning, overall strength building still. A lot of core strength and a lot of pelvic floor work.
Yeah. And
so good. And it's amazing because doing that one-on-one with somebody is like, yeah, you can go and do the work with the pelvic floor health, but having someone there to really continue to remind you what you're trying to focus on, and that breathing becomes such a huge part of that training, the training session as well, which is great for practicing for being in labor.
Yep. But it'll also translate till after as well. Breathing, movement and breathing is so important. I wish every athlete would go through some training on how to actually breathe and move at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, and he keeps saying, so for him, he trained me before the Olympic trials, and we got to a really good place, and I was very strong, very happy. But we knew that there were still all these weaknesses that were very internal and like core strength based.
Yeah,
and they affected stability, like our movements in the boat, you know. So when we change tacks or jibes, we're going from one side to the other of our body because we're changing from one side of the boat to the other.
Yes.
So like if you have a dominance issue, it can really be
a problem. Yes.
So we weren't able to solve all those problems before the trials, but it didn't have this overwhelming impact in our performance. But it's one of those places where you get to a level where you're like, if I could fix that, I would be able to focus a little more on something else. So the pregnancy itself has actually been this opportunity to like basically like strengthen my pelvic floor, that core work, do the breathing work that maybe in 2 or 3 years will allow me to lift a lot heavier and will allow me to be a lot more stable.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
But there's one more thing too that I think is really important to mention, and it's a really strong focus on like fascial flexibility and fascial stretching.
Yeah.
And activation. So like that's something I think that has, I think is a little less addressed by people in general, but also by pregnant women. And that's been a really big deal. I think that has had a big impact on how my body has changed and like my belly has grown. And then how I'm able to retain like cross body strength regardless of that change.
Mm. Oh, I love that. That's so good. Way to take advantage of a good time, right? Like it's the time that you had. That's really neat that was your like result that came from that. That's really cool.
And now 5 weeks left in the pregnancy. We stopped increasing intensity. So we're not doing anything heavy. We're doing a lot of band work. And I had a lot of TRX work. Like he asked me last week, he's like, okay, we're going to do pistol squats with the TRX. And I'm like, I weigh 167 pounds right now.
Yes.
I don't care how hard I hold on to the TRX. It sucks.
Yes. No, that's really cool though. And all of that will translate, you know, to afterwards too. So that's all awesome. Okay, Pam, now it's your turn. So
I'm on the spotlight.
Yes. You've learned so much about health over the years through your journey through autoimmune, and you're now working on a farm, and mm-hmm. you've learned, I would imagine, so much about nutrition and food and how it affects your body and mm-hmm. our bodies. Can you, you've touched on it already in this podcast a little bit, just like the journey that you went through as far as like, you know, maybe not eating as healthy versus, you know, what it looks like now.
Yeah.
How has, like what you've learned as an athlete translated into what you do now, as far as food, nutrition, farming, all of that?
Yeah. Well, so I was an athlete for 6 years, and I would say the first couple of years, for the first couple of years, I was always trying to drop pounds. Like that was my, cause you're in a boat and every single pound that you have is coming along with you, and you've got to move that with you.
Oh, yeah.
And so we, like I was working a lot on, I guess, calorie deficit, which was not the scary calorie deficit that we think of now, like all that I think of now when I think about not being an athlete, because I was exercising for in excess of 18 hours a week, maybe more on like bigger training weeks. Like I trained 6 days a week, three sessions a day, every single week, other than my break, which was 3 weeks at the end of the season. And so I didn't really have a trouble to like do the calorie deficit thing, but because of that, I was making a lot of choices of like, I was choosing to have like low calorie, low fat versions of stuff. And then I kind of had my own food revolution, so I started rowing in late 2010, and I probably had my food revolution in like 2013.
That sounds about right.
Where I,
wise of the nutrition world. Yeah.
Yeah. And I started, like just really paying more attention about like what I like and doing my own research instead of just being told, okay, so you should, why don't you try low fat cream cheese instead of full fat? And why don't you take this supplement instead of this and blah, blah, blah. And I would start looking at my stuff myself and like trying to do a bit more research myself instead of just trusting exactly what everyone around me had very good intentions, mm-hmm. but they're doing things based on what worked for them or what their training told them to do and stuff like that. And it's like, well, it needs to be individualized for myself. And it also coincided with watching a documentary called Food Inc.
Yeah. Such a good one.
It's a really good one, but it's the type of thing that you watch and you're like, wah. I know. So that kind of really freaked me out about like food, my food sources, where they were coming from, like how specifically I'm not a vegetarian. I eat a decent amount of animal protein. And so specifically looking about like where that protein was coming from and the sources and like what the quality was. So I just started doing real deep dives into like food and pesticides and antibiotics and all of this kind of scary stuff. And that kind of then led me, with the help of my boyfriend, now husband, Rob, who has kind of experimented. He was a pro athlete as well. That's how we met.
Yeah.
And he did triathlon for a while, was trying to get into the Paralympic team for 2016. And he did fat adaptation for a while.
Yeah.
Like intense fat adaptation. So he tracked every single macro, and it was a help that he was living in Salt Lake City as a, like essentially a bachelor by himself. So he just focused solely on like, what am I putting in my body? He's like also the most determined, strong-willed and disciplined man on the planet, which makes me feel like garbage when I want to eat a cookie, but that's a whole nother conversation. So he taught me a lot as well, started sharing some really good blogs with me.
Sure.
About fat and how like fats really was demonized for a long time, and how we are like, everyone was kind of scared and of consuming too much fat and saturated fat versus unsaturated fat and all these kind of scary terms. And he really helped me and like led me towards some sources now that I really trust, about like learning about like how actually fat should not be demonized, and that you that is essential. Like, it's not just like, oh no, it's not too bad, like go ahead, chuck some butter on it. It's like, there is actually like essential things that we are missing because we're cutting too much fat out of our diets.
Yeah. And on top of that, we're still eating so much of processed foods, which are very high in omega-6s and other
inflammatory
fats and fatty acids that,
yeah,
it's kind of a mess. So if you're not eating enough fat, you're not balancing that out. And then it just creates this major inflammatory environment. And for you in particular, you want to make sure you manage that inflammation as much as you possibly can. And
that's,
So keep going.
And that was kind of what I came to, that like the idea of like, I'm not really doing like a low inflammatory diet, but I'm eating in a way which I know is balancing out those fatty acids. That's going to kind of put me in the right state, which it cut like, so I don't know how many of your listeners kind of know, they probably know a lot more about it than I do, but the way I was taught about autoimmune diseases is like, it's your immune system and it's having a reaction, and it might be having a reaction to something genuine, and sometimes it's having a reaction to nothing at all, but it's still a reaction. And so you want to try and reduce the activity and the like kind of potency of your immune system as much as you can. And one of the things that pro athletes will tell you is the more you train, the more likely you are to get sick, because your body is like always just being beaten down, which is kind of a bad thing. And you have to be really careful about that. But if you've got an autoimmune disease, it can actually be really incredible, because it can actually really suppress your immune system, which for me was kind of great because my immune system was kind of going crazy with my arthritis. It was like overactive. And so I was taking immunosuppressants as well as being a pro athlete. So my arthritis was actually like exceptionally well controlled when I was an athlete. And that, along with sleeping like 10 hours a night and eating really well, like I was just really super, super dedicated to like the lifestyle that went alongside with being an athlete. And then now, like having transitioned from sport, it's still like food is the entire reason that I have chosen this career path. Like I'm obsessed with food, eating, cooking, talking about it, giving it to people, selling it, like everything about it, and always like the highest quality that I can muster. And it's actually led me to some really incredible kind of learning lessons in my life. Like I had like I mentioned before, my business partner is a registered dietitian, and she did a MRT testing on me, mediator release testing. And that was really, really interesting, because as somebody who is kind of living in a pro, like a very inflamed state, to learn about like what foods in that I'm consuming routinely are causing inflammation, was just really, really fascinating. And it was like not any of the things that most people think. Like most people are thinking, well, maybe dairy and for me, it was peppers, coffee, and Tylenol. And I'm like, well, the first one is like, okay, peppers, you know, they're kind of an addition to a meal for me. I can take it or leave it, but coffee, are you kidding me? Like, why take that from me?
Did you stop drinking coffee?
Well, you know what, part of this MRT testing is that like you go onto like a super low inflammatory diet for like 3 weeks, and then you like slowly reintroduce foods and see how they affected you. And I did notice all of those things, like those were the three main things. Other things like would show like a little bit of an inflamed response, but those were the main things that were like, these are big. And I did notice a little bit of a response for it, but it was never enough that I'm like, oh, I shouldn't eat that. Right. But it was more that it's like, okay, so if I eat peppers, for example, and then I'm sore the next day, it's like, I know why, like there's a reason why that I'm feeling this. And it's kind of just allows me to like understand. And it's not sore as in like would stop me doing anything. Like I would still, I'm so lucky in that my condition is just really well controlled with medication, so that I can still, like, if I ate all of those like these foods that are going to cause an issue, I would still go for a run the next day. Like it's not so sore I'm staying in bed or anything. I'm just like more aware of it. And another thing we did, I mean, it's kind of off topic, but you guys might be kind of interested in it, is that we were part of a study on the farm last year where we sent in crop samples of 12 different crops that we were growing along with the soil samples. And they're basically trying to learn about like our soil management practices with like what we're doing with the soil, how we're caring for them, and like the actual nutritional macronutrient breakdown of the food that we're growing. And like, is it, because you know how some people say like, okay, well, if you do organic is what most people recognize, organic food is going to be better for you than conventionally grown food. And we kind of all accepted that. But now they're saying, well, what if the food is grown organically, but also in like a regenerative way? So like regenerating the soil, using a lot of compost and using a lot of mulch and no-till and all this nice stuff. Yep. And like, how does that translate to like what the nutrient breakdown is of these individual foods? It was really, really fascinating. And we've got this spreadsheet result that's like just the biggest spreadsheet I've ever seen that we have to like go through. And every single sample has like a BRICS indicator, like the sweetness and all this like really juicy information. It's like so, so nice.
Out of curiosity, does it look like the nutrient density is higher?
It's really hard to tell because they're comparing the results we've got are comparing us to everyone else that was in the study, but we don't know what their individual growing practices are. And so what they're going to do is they're writing a paper now and they're going to release the paper. It's called the Real Food Campaign, if anyone's interested. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd just be super curious because it's one of the things I look into a lot as far as knowing that the soil, the nutrient density in the soil translates quite a bit into the plants themselves. Mm-hmm. But also if you use fertilizers, if you use stuff like that, it makes the plants grow faster for sure. But then they often don't have quite as high of nutrient density as it would seem. Mm-hmm. So, and all of that then translates right into like what we take in, and being somebody who works with micronutrients on a daily basis. A lot of it is coming from food, the lack of it, but then also the lack of it in the foods, which we've seen over decades of time as our farming practices have really depleted the soils of nutrients and things like that.
So And it's interesting because like for someone in your position, like you're kind of recommending, okay, well, you probably need to have more of this in your diet. So why don't you try eating more of this vegetable? But if that vegetable has like, you know, 80% less of vitamin whatever in it than it did when the textbooks were written 30 years ago, like you're kind of there going, well, now you have to eat 15 pounds of strawberries. Go.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course you've got the other side of the story, which is like, should we be supplementing? And this is a whole other podcast in and of itself, but you know, should we be supplementing? What do supplements actually do? We should be getting these things from our food, you know, and it's this constant ring around, right? Because just of so many of the different practices that are just different than what it used to be. And so, it's crazy, but that's amazing though. I mean, I love hearing about how people manage their, you know, just the different things that they deal with on a daily basis, but you know, autoimmune and all of that, I work with it all every day. So, it's like, seriously, it's cool to hear other people's experiences, but you know, I wish that every single one of my autoimmune patients could get to the point where you're at, you know, in that sense of understanding how food really not just my autoimmune patients. I wish everybody could get to a point where they can experience how food really does interact with their bodies and get to a place where they have that balance that you mentioned, right? It's really, really cool. So this was absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. Thank you to both of you so much for your time and for coming on to spend a little bit of time with me for this episode. It was like, I'm just so thrilled.
We love talking to you. This was so easy.
I love talking to you guys. So just real quickly, I wanted to cover, tell us a little bit more about your podcast so we can get people over to watch and subscribe to your podcast.
The End Game, we started recording and Sarah's obviously got an impending life change about to happen. So we're kind of practicing what we preach already, in that we're basically just taking it really, really slow. We have a lot of really exciting kind of ideas of like what direction we're going to take it in. So kind of reversing, we did the Mum's the Word podcast with Wes Swartz, and that was really focused on, female athletes in sports and like how females were navigating the world of motherhood and sport at the same time, which we're kind of continuing on that vein, but we're trying to bring in as well some like other life lessons of like, you know, the origin of why there is discrimination against women in all careers, not just sports, as well as like, how is it that we can help train future leaders to be able to lift women up and encourage them and nurture them through their chosen career, sport or otherwise, you know, in years to come. And I mean, we touched about that, like about the fact that Sarah's doing some coaching now during her pregnancy, and like we're the big thing that I guess we want our listeners to take away from it is that like we're kind of going on this journey at the same time. We're not coming in as the experts saying like, well, this is how you do it, folks. Like we're kind of saying like, well, this is kind of working for me right now, and it might not work for me in the future. I'll keep you updated. And I guess it's more, you know, asking, we were talking about this earlier, about like asking the hard questions, not just of our listeners and of the world, but like of ourselves, like challenging our biases about women and our place in the world, and how we can kind of create this new world order of, you know, an actual equal level playing field.
I love it.
Yeah. And I think one more thing to add there is just like, we talk about this in our pilot episode, but we have been living in the time of COVID. You know, which soon will be hopefully over, but it has been really interesting, you know, to realize what that has done for women in the workplace and in sport as an extension of that. And just Pam and I keep going back to a conversation that we had with one of the founders of And Mother, which is an amazing nonprofit organization.
Yep.
And Molly Dickens mentioned to us this concept of like, we have been patched in with tape and glue and now it is gone. That is cool. You know, so one of the ways that we're operating is really inspired by Molly and has a lot to do with, you know what, we're rebuilding something here. And it is really unfortunate what has happened for our gender right now in the world, as far as the fallout from this pandemic. But what can we do in terms of dialogue, and what can we do in terms of asking these hard questions and stoking the dialogue and you know, and talking about the things that are happening that are great and the things that are happening that are completely not helping. And then again, going back to just, you know, we're both pro athletes and moms, soon to be mom, and entrepreneurs, and you know, and we want to be able to talk about that athlete mentality and what it means to bring your M game. What is the motherhood?
I love it. So where can they find the podcast?
So we're going to be, well, I guess TBC on where we're going to, we're kind of biding our time to make sure that we're ready to like continue on. Cause obviously we just don't know what having a baby is going to do. I know if someone had told me, oh, let's launch a podcast 5 weeks before your baby's due, at the time I'd have said, sure. And then like the day after having a baby, I'd have been like, wait, what, who said that? I didn't say that.
No, we're definitely, so we're well before release right now. We're hoping to release in May.
We have a website.
Yes.
Yep.
And you can follow that. They find you on Instagram, right? At the M Game.
Mm-hmm. M Game podcast. Yep.
The M Game podcast. Yep. So follow along there so that people can see when you do launch it, which I'm really excited for that. And then on social media, where can they each find you if you'd like?
So I'm on Instagram at Pam Ralph MBE.
Okay.
And I'm on Instagram as well at Sarah Lauren Newberry.
Awesome. Okay. Gosh, thanks to both of you. It was so great to have you.
Yes.
Hopefully we can do this again, because I just love talking to
you. Yeah, well, we want you to come on our show too.
We'll do it.
Feel like it's one of those combinations of us three where it's like you could just like go into so many deep rabbit holes.
I know. I'm like watching the time. I'm like, okay, we gotta wrap this up here. But like, seriously, I think I could talk to you both for another like 3 hours. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you so much for watching the Dr. K Show. I hope that you enjoyed this. The next episode, so this will be live in a week from now, but the next episode, I think it's with just me. So we'll figure out what topic to do for that one. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care.